Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact myself, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how's it going?
Almost wishing we had snow on the ground.
McKay, come on. I was going to talk about that when I talked about the real estate business.
Well, it's better than wind and rain and gook and mud.
Well, I mean, a little bit, but I tell you what, without that snow, we are busy. I mean, we put two homes on the market earlier this week that were in that sweet spot price point, 160, one was 225, like seven showings each the first day, multiple offers.
Wow.
Under contract, over list price. So you know what, McKay? You can take your snow and you can keep it because I'm selling some.
I thought he was going to go somewhere else.
I'm selling a lot of real estate right now because the weather's been mild by standards. But I do appreciate that. And McKay, I got to say too, I don't know. You do have a great radio voice. I was listening to the show, playback of the show last week, kind of critiquing what we had done and thinking of some new things to make it better. And Mike, we don't sound like McKay.
Well, you haven't hung out with smokers all your life.
Oh, okay.
Not that I do, but
you know. No, and I'm not going to. So we're good there.
There you go.
As always, with us here in the studio, our in-house lending specialist, Mr. Mike Denslow at Home Street. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I was going to say that I like the weather. The higher temperatures. And I go back to business as well, just like you do. And I looked at how many loans we closed last year in January versus how many we're going to close this year. And you're not going to believe this, but it's double.
Wow.
We're going to close twice as many loans this month that we closed in January of last year. And when I was thinking about it, I was like, man, that is crazy. We're really doing this and that. And I was like, oh, that's right.
Snowmageddon.
And people couldn't go see houses.
Yeah, it is. It's really been nice. And especially for our sellers out there, you know, a lot of sellers want to get going on getting a home sold in the new year. A lot of times they end up waiting until March 1st, March 15th, and just those few examples I gave, we've been just slammed with meetings because we're able to get decent pictures right now still, get them on the market. There's not a lot of inventory, partly because it is the winter and partly because we're still in that low Tri-Cities inventory stage, and we're getting them sold, and we're getting them sold fast. So it's a great start to the year for us.
Well, I think a little bit of freezing rain, a little bit of snow is not, you know, 45 days in a row of being under snow.
You got it. So we'll keep going. We'll keep going with that and staying super busy. Before we jump into our serious real estate topic, Mike, Zillow did a little research over the last couple of weeks, and they had a survey and a contest. And the question was, who would be your most desirable TV neighbor?
Ooh.
Anybody come to mind for Mr. Mike Denslow? Who would you like to live next to?
Oh, I was more thinking about who everyone would pick, and I'm guessing the Gaines fixer-upper people would like to live next to them.
You know, not too bad. That's a great choice, and I think my wife would enjoy that, and I would get a kick out of Chip, too. It'd be nice to sit down and have a beer with him for sure. But the number one TV character that people picked that they want to be their neighbors, and that's Leonard and Penny from Big Bang Theory.
Oh, wow.
as who they would want to have as their neighbor. Number two, and I get a kick out of this.
I would have picked comedian Ron White.
Oh, Ron White would be McKay's. I get a kick out of this because there's a real estate connection, is the Dumfies from Modern Family.
Oh, yeah.
Was number two on the list. And And that's another really, really good one for sure.
My favorite, I remember, I used to watch that show all the time. My favorite line from Phil was when he was introduced to this attractive woman. She said, "Well, what do you do?" And he said, "Oh, I'm a real estate mogul. I mean, a real estate agent."
that's awesome. There's some great sites, and actually, we've collected a few of them in our office. And they're real estate quotes from Phil Dunphy. And so there's some really good ones out there. Now, they also in the same survey said who would be the least desirable neighbors. From TV, and topping that list was The Simpsons.
Really?
People would not want to be neighbors with them. And then also a show I'm familiar with that came up is the Lannisters from Game of Thrones. People would not want to be neighbors with that evil family. I think they'd always be looking over their shoulder to see if they were going to get stabbed or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So there you have it. A little bit of fun with real estate because neighbors can matter when you're looking at resale value of homes and how neighbors' homes are kept, if people are there during showings and there's super loud music and band practice going on
in
the garage.
How many police calls are at the house?
It comes into play. So that's kind of a fun take on neighbors and how they can matter with the TV spin on it. Going to our serious topic, Mike and I had talked, and we had kind of felt like we had had some overreaching type topics the last couple weeks, and we said, let's go back and dive into some of the actual details and the mechanics of the transaction. And with Mike's expertise and mine, one of the things that we see a lot that is misunderstood, and that is the financing contingency. There's a lot of times where people out in our marketplace, they know enough from being around real estate or they've heard things. They know enough when they sit down with their agent to say, "Oh, I want to make it contingent upon financing." And that's about what they know. So, which is a great first step. They know that's important. So, as a baseline and knowledge, I just wanted to say, why does the financing contingency exist contractually as a baseline for us to start our discussion today? And it actually comes from the very first written out paragraph in our residential purchase and sale agreement. So the very first item A is purchase price. So it defines the purchase price. When you make an offer, the contract you sign defines the purchase price. And in that definition, it says buyer shall pay the seller the purchase price along with the earnest money in cash at closing unless otherwise specified in this agreement. So when you sign your purchase and sale agreement, you are agreeing to bring cash, to deliver cash to the seller for the purchase price, unless otherwise specified. How do you otherwise specify that you're getting a loan? You do that through using the financing addendum in our purchase and sale agreement. And it also further represents on that purchase price that it says the buyer represents that the buyer has sufficient funds to close the sale in accordance with this agreement and is not relying on any contingent funds, including funds from loans, sale of other property, gifts, retirement, or future earnings, once again, except to the extent otherwise specified.
And Lance, this is, you started going into all this stuff right here, and this is exactly why I think you need representation. I mean, people who think, oh, yeah, I'm just going to do this on my own. How hard can it be? And you just read two sentences out of a multi-page legal document that I'm just would be scared to do without representation.
Yeah, and a lot of times what happens is buyers will sign something like that, not understand that they have not otherwise disclosed, So now they've put themselves into a situation where basically they have falsely presented the offer that they gave the other party.
Unknowingly. Falsely, yeah.
And so what happens, and we have to turn, what happens after that, we're not allowed to speak about because I don't have a law license. And what happens after that is
nothing.
Lance says, yeah, you know, because of this is what's gone on, now you need to go talk to an attorney about what the ramifications of that is. And so it's really, really interesting. But those two sentences, like you said, are the foundation of why we start to specify. And that brings us now to the actual financing addendum to the purchase and sale agreement that we as agents use in the state of Washington and in our local marketplace. And so that is what agents know as a Form 22A. And it spells out exactly, this agreement is contingent on the buyer obtaining the following type of loan or loans to purchase the property. And then what there is there is six check boxes where they can check a conventional mortgage, a conventional second mortgage, a bridge loan, a VA, an FHA, or a USDA. And there's also a seventh choice that comes into play sometimes that actually says home equity line of credit, because someone might be purchasing, this might be their second home they're purchasing, and they might be applying for a home equity line of credit on maybe their first home that's paid off to use those funds to purchase the second. So Mike, here's where when someone writes an offer, they are going to check one of these boxes. So now not only are they writing an offer, they're giving information to the seller. Mr. Seller, this is the type of loan that I'm using to purchase your property. Now, to do this properly, Mike, I'm going to say that they should have been in your office determining what type of loan they're going to use before they presented this offer.
Yeah, when I got into this business 15 years ago, it seemed like buyers were a little less proactive than they are now. I mean, most agents now require that, yeah, you get all pre-approved before we write an offer. But there's still some agents that just, hey, whatever you want, what are you doing? Oh, you're doing conventional, you're doing 5% down. Okay, I'll write an offer and I'll throw it out there. And then you can worry about your financing later. But obviously, that's not a good idea. The majority of the time, yeah, we're meeting, we're figuring out VA, FHA, conventional, whichever, and we're figuring out if it's 5% down, 10, 20, 25, whichever, and that's being included as a strength to the offer. I mean, you want to put together a position of strength in the financing addendum, so if you are in a multi-offer situation, that the seller and the selling agent look at and go, oh, wow, well, these people want to put 25% down. And everybody else was going to put 5. I mean, this goes back to you. You've been on the other side. You see all these offers, and you're making the recommendation to your seller, or you're explaining them to your seller. I mean, you want this to be actual. You want this, because if it's not, there could be problems.
Yeah, and Mike, you bring up a great point. And what you said was you want this to be actual, or there could be problems. The very next paragraph in the financing addendum that 98% of buyers signs starts to talk about those problems. It's called the B1B, waiver of financing contingency. Waiver of financing is not good for a buyer. That means you're getting rid of the protections that the financing contingency covers you for. The very first paragraph says, number one, if buyer fails to make application for the financing for the property within the agreed amount of time, or changes the type of loan at any time without the seller's prior written consent. So let's say they had presented this offer and they said, gosh, you know, I talked to my buddy at a cocktail party, and I think he said I was going to get a conventional loan. So that's how they presented their offer. They actually go in, they meet with Mike, and Mike's like, no, things are different than what you told me after you had had three or four drinks. We need to do an FHA loan. And they're like, great, let's do it. Well, a lot of times that buyer won't even realize, hey, you know, 2 weeks later, we find out that there's an FHA appraisal on the property. And the buyer calls and the selling agent is like, well, we were told you were getting a conventional loan. You said that in your offer. You marked that box. Now, all of a sudden, we're dealing with an FHA appraisal. You never got our permission to switch to FHA financing. And now let's say the appraisal, something goes wrong with the appraisal and the buyer can't get the loan because of the, maybe it appraises low. Well, the problem being, if they never told the seller they were switching to an FHA loan and the seller didn't agree to it, they've now waived their financing contingency based upon this paragraph, and they're not getting their earnest money back. So the, maybe they put $2,000, $3,000 earnest money down. Their financing contingency that was protecting them was gone because they didn't get the permission of the seller to change that loan time. And that's just one example of what could possibly happen. And
so that's like a great big fat derp.
Yeah, and in fact, under the same paragraph, that example that I just gave says buyer's waiver of the financing contingency under this paragraph also constitutes waiver of paragraph 7, appraisal less than sales price. So they've even covered that example that I just gave off the top of my head is covered in there, that you've waived the appraisal addendum, appraisal portion of this at the same time. So there are a lot of little things that come into play there. What we're going to talk about that I am super excited about, and a lot of, we'll say, agents and people in the market were not really excited about, is approximately 3 years ago, our forms made a major, major change to what information was available to parties in a transaction, and I believe really revolutionized how we dealt with lenders and other parties in our industry. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk about that revolutionary change and how we're still dealing with lack of acceptance of it in our marketplace.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've kind of been taking a deep dive today into a little bit the world of financing and contractually how that happens in our purchase and sale agreements in the real estate transaction. Before the break, we talked a little bit about the back, how we get financing contingencies put into agreements, but then really kind of looking at the mechanics of what goes on in the financing agreement. And so about 3 years ago, our industry made a big change in the way that our forms were handled. And I can even kind of give you a brief description of one of the most frustrating parts about real estate, I would say probably, and it was worse 10 to 15 years ago. And there had always been a very big wall between the lender for the buyer and the agent and the seller on the other side of the transaction. I mean, it reminded me of East Germany and West Germany, you know. I mean, and so the wall was put up, and it was an industry taboo and no-no for that agent representing the seller to even think about talking to the lender for the buyer.
Or asking any questions or anything.
Or asking any questions about it. And so what invariably would happen if you were representing a seller, one of the most frustrating things that would happen is you would be 25 days into a transaction and 7 days from closing, and you would get a call and you would say like, hey, the financing fell apart. So your first question is, well, what the heck happened? Well, I can't say a lot, but I can't say, oh, there's somebody calling to talk to us about that deal. But they would say, I can't say a lot, but it fell apart, you know. And then through the grapevine or later, you might find out that, you know, that person didn't have a job even. And so you're like, wait a minute, how can this happen? This can't be right. I had a pre-approval letter. And so it was really, really, really frustrating for lack of information. And I actually think culturally and in our society, with the transparency of information, things going online, people knowing more about situations in general, have helped change the tide of that flow of information to the point where they felt it necessary to implement into our forms a mechanism for the agent on the other side of a transaction to figure out what was going on. Mm. And this would prevent, say, a seller from taking their home off the market if a buyer was, let's say, on the edge of approvable. Maybe they're trying to scrape together the last $2,000 for their down payment. Maybe they're waiting on an inheritance, and it's about to come through. So what this mechanism does, and it's actually now paragraph number 2 in our financing addendums, and it's called loan information. And so what it says is, it says at any time X, and the X is a default, our default time period, that's a negotiated time period, but our contract defaults at 10 days. So at any time 10 days after mutual acceptance, the seller may give once a notice requesting information related to the status of the buyer's loan application.
Mm.
And it says what form to use that on. It's called a 22AL is used for that notice. And so the 22AL simply says, pursuant to Section 2 in the financing, the seller requests that buyer give notice of the status of their loan application. And then it requires the buyer to reply on a specific form called 22AP. So for the first time, what this was is, this was a legally binding obligation that the seller could, and they don't have to, but the seller could at a certain time frame make that request. And this form, this 22AP form, goes to the buyer, and it asks the buyer to verify when did they make full application for the loan. Because as we talked about in paragraph 1 of the financing addendum, they have a negotiated number of days to make application for that loan. If they don't get in and make application, then they could be in breach of the contract, and they could be also waiving that contingency.
Mm.
So it asks for information such as, when was the loan made? Have you provided to the lender recent pay stubs? Your W-2s for the prior 2 years, your Form 1040 individual income tax return for prior 2 years. So it goes through and it asks the buyer to verify what information they have provided. So the seller can now use that mechanism to find out much earlier in a transaction if something is going on that they don't think should be going on. So, Mike, I know this was a big change. This was something 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you never even saw from a, there wasn't even a mechanism. You never even saw from a local real estate agent. So I can imagine on your side as the lender, this also caused you guys some problems.
Yeah, it did. We used to do a decent amount of transactions in Arizona, you know, when the market dropped in Arizona and then everybody started buying these $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 places down there. This was a regular mechanism in the Arizona market for several years, and so we were helping filling out these forms for buyers way back then, and the agents down there were very diligent on it. So when it came into Washington and it popped up, it wasn't a complete surprise for us. I I don't have a problem with it. I like it. We're a local, reputable lender, and so we fill it out. We get it right back. I'm sure there are plenty of 800 number lenders and online lenders that absolutely hate it.
Like the Hughes just, members.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, and the other thing, Mike, too, is, you know, we do a lot of business with you guys over at Home Street. It's helpful when we have a good local lender like that where we get regular updates. I mean, you guys are communicating with us. Here's where we're at. We've made application. We have this information. Here's where things are going.
We've ordered the appraisal.
Yeah, yeah. So it's nice when you have a different comfortability level when you do that. And so that's real nice. You're exactly right. If we're submitting this type of notice to a buyer and they're dealing with a lender that takes 4 days to get a hold of through a 1-800 number, they're going to have a lot harder time complying with this notice.
And that's why we've talked about this before is, you know, everybody thinks they can grab this great rate that they found online, but closing the loan on time and meeting the obligations of the contract is two different things. I mean, and it's sometimes it's a shell game. Oh, hey, we can do this, but can you really close the loan? I mean, it's just
absolutely. And then that's a decision armed with the right information. Then a seller can decide if that's a risk they're willing to take. And I will tell you, this type of communication was met with a lot of resistance when it first came to our market. We still are getting it. It's not, I wouldn't call it 100% commonplace yet. We're not getting these on, it's not anywhere near 50% of the transactions that we're looking at. And in fact, I've had other brokers in town call me and be very, very upset about using this form. They're offended by it. They say I don't trust them as another agent, that I don't trust their buyer for doing that. And I'm a big fan of, there's a show called The Italian Job, and there was a saying in there that's, it's not you that I don't trust, it's the little devil inside of your buyer. I've altered that saying for real estate. And so this just allows us to be able to properly report that information so that the other party can make an informed decision. We've actually found like that it expedites the process for us by using this, because many times, like we said, the buyer will respond and say, oh my gosh, I didn't check this one box on the 1040s because I'm waiting for a final 1099, or I'm waiting for an adjustment to come through. And so it's just nice if we know that fact. We can then report to the seller and say, hey, we got the loan information notice back. They've provided 9 out of the 10 items. We've talked to the lender. The 9 out of the 10 look good. They're just waiting on this one. And a lot of times, just us making that request for information forces the buyer to get it in a little bit quicker. And so it's really just become a standard of practice that we absolutely love. And then on the flip side of that, there's a mechanism in there that if the buyer does not timely get that filled out and return to the seller, then the seller can give what's called the right to terminate notice. And that right to terminate notice says that you did not return a fully completed 22 AP to us. And so based upon that, and if we have a discussion with your lender and we're not happy with how things are going, as a seller, we can terminate the contract. And that's very, very rare. It's one of the only mechanisms in our contract that gives a seller the right to terminate.
And Lance, that's reactive, proactive. Right? I mean, that's the definition.
Absolutely. And so we really feel like for our sellers out there that this is just a standard part of the contract. We're executing those forms. Another thing that it does, and I will say that there's some privacy laws out there, and I can't even imagine the regulation that Mike has to deal with on his side with lending. We see a huge amount of it just with our license in real estate. But there's information that without a buyer's signature, there's private information that Mike has, that without his buyer's permission, he can't give that information to the other agent or the seller. So one of the nice things about that form does is it executes permission so that Mike can have those conversations with the other parties and not be violating the buyer's privacy.
And I keep thinking, we've got a half-hour radio show. We've talked about one small section within one small section of a very long contract. And, yeah, Lance, I mean, people need to use your team services to represent them, buyer or seller.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate that. And that's one of the things we do and we are doing right now. It's busy. People are out there looking. And I would just say to buyers out there, if you would like to keep the protections that this financing contingency and addendum provide you active throughout your entire transaction, give me a call so I can get you with one of my buyer specialists. And then maybe even more so, sellers that are looking to list their home and go on the market, if you want a very aggressive agent that uses these terms within the contract to protect your interest to the maximum amount, and you're looking at putting your home on the market, give me a call. My listing team is crazy efficient and going on a lot of appointments right now so that we can have your home ready for the spring market. McKay, I think that's going to do it for us.
Wow.
We talked about half of the material that I brought. I didn't even get into appraisals, so we're going to bump that to another show. But thanks again for all the referrals out there and a huge, quick, fast start to 2018. We'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.